Welcome to CFRI Cystic Fibrosis Community Voices, a video podcast series created by and for the cystic fibrosis community.
Hello, and welcome to CFRI's CF Community Voices, coming to you from our home studio in Palo Alto, California. I'm Sue Landgraf, Executive Director of Cystic Fibrosis Research Incorporated, CFRI, and I'm very pleased to welcome our viewers and listeners. We have a very special program ahead, but before getting started, I want to thank our generous sponsors, Vertex Pharmaceuticals, Chiesa USA, Gilead Sciences, Genentech, and Proteostasis Therapeutics. I also would like to note that no information presented in this podcast is intended for a patient's diagnosis or treatment. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. Thank you, and let's get started.
Hi, my name is Robert Wright, Bob Wright, call me Bingo. We're here talking today on a podcast about sexuality and cystic fibrosis and fertility and some of those related issues. I was born in 1964. Back then, they didn't really have a lot of diagnostic stuff to be telling people, you know, why babies didn't thrive. So it took a couple of years before anybody diagnosed me with CF. And that was more digestive issues than lung issues at the time. I grew up just kind of picking my way through and trying to just kind of figure out CF as I went. And one of the early memories I have of CF and talking about just issues that people with CF have is hearing, just kind of overhearing at a meeting, a fundraising meeting about guys not being able to have children, guys with CF not being able to have children. And at the time, it didn't really faze me at all. I wasn't sexually active. I didn't have, you know, big plans to raise a family or anything like that. So I just kind of grew up with the knowledge that there's something about infertility in males with CF, but it's, you know, whatever it is, it's not on my agenda at the moment, so I'm not really worried about it. Puberty, I think, hit me probably the same age as people, men without CF. I don't remember it being a concern at all, either for me or for my doctors. I was in a drug study at the time for a drug that reduced stomach acid, and they had us in the hospital for a week with all this testing and you know, measuring what we're eating, how much we're absorbing, that kind of thing. And then they waited 6 months, had us in, and waited 6 months and had us in too. It was a double blind, so one was on the drug and one was off, 1 6-month period. And I remember the period between the second hospitalization and the third. Man, I just, like, hair was sprouting everywhere. I was starting to talk lower. Everything just kind of hit me all at once. And I remember the doctor kind of just being a little surprised when he saw me the third time, like, wow. So I don't know that my nutrition status or body mass or anything had any impact on when I hit puberty. So the issues about telling people or telling potential sexual partners about your CF, and even just potential life partners about, you know, just having some medical chronic illness. I grew up in a very very strict religious upbringing, and I didn't actually have sex before I got married, and so I was just, you know, it never really came up to I got married at 19, so it's not like I was, you know, living years as a celibate priest. But it never really came up with potential lovers or anything like that, because everybody that I was either dating or spending any kind of amount of time with knew CF, and I would talk to them about it very openly, and it was never something I felt like I had to bring up, you know, in some hard conversation. It was always just a kind of a continuous norm for me. And the first thing I would tell people when I met them or whatever is that I'm not contagious. You know, I cough a lot, but I'm not contagious. And, you know, that would usually lead to the questions of, you know, why do you cough a lot? And so it was never something I, you know, I had girlfriends before I got married, obviously, and it's never something that even worried any of them at all. Although I will say that when I was in junior high, my sister spread a rumor around that I was going to die young, and so none of the girls should get involved with me. I found this out recently. I didn't know it at the time. I found out from a girl that I was attracted to that later, you know, she's married, I'm married, we're connected on Facebook, and she said, did I ever tell you that? And so, you know, kind of ideas about my health were already circulating in my social circles long before sex came into play. So a few years later, I met and started dating my wife, and she knew about CF. She was a nurse. We'd met at a CF camp for kids with cystic fibrosis. So, you know, medical issues were not a big, like, talking point that we had to get to at some point. We both kind of just knew, we knew enough about CF that we were comfortable talking about it and didn't have to talk about a lot of it. When we decided to get married, my then physician, who's a general practitioner, suggested that we get a sperm count done to see if, you know, I'm fertile or not, because that would kind of play on issues about whether, you know, just how we dealt with sex and all that, whether we needed contraceptives and all that. Turns out I was infertile. For the first few years of marriage, it really didn't matter. We hadn't planned on starting a family, and it wasn't really in my expectations or desires at the time. And over time, we decided that, yeah, we kind of wanted to look into this and see what was possible and see what was likely and see what was, you know, what we wanted to do. So we went to a fertility specialist. Explained to him kind of the CF thing a little bit, and he knew a little bit, and it was enough to get started from. The first thing he wanted to do is get a sperm count for me, which ended up being zero. So we knew that the vas deferens wasn't patent, wasn't working, or, you know, at least something in there wasn't working, wasn't open. We discussed it at home and decided to try and do a fix of that where they could kind of bypass the area if it was just one little area that was closed up. I had a surgery. They were not able to. They said it was just, you know, completely unpassable all the way through the vas deferens. So one of the things about fertility specialists that I have found through this series of meetings was that there's always another and more expensive procedure available if you want to continue on. And, you know, they had things like they could remove immature sperm from testicle and then mix it with donor sperm, and you wouldn't really know whether it was your child or not, things like that. But, my wife and I decided we really wanted a family. We didn't really care about pregnancy, per se, and she actually is happy now that she never had to be pregnant. We decided we were just going to adopt, and the adoption process took a little while. It took us kind of a little while to just decide to actually go about doing something about it. Went to some meetings with county adoption agencies, things like that, the public ones. Found out some good and some bad about that. Went to a private one. Found out some good and bad about that. And we ended up deciding that for our first child, we wanted to adopt privately. There are generally less concerns about it as far as having a child with special needs or anything like that. We decided we kind of wanted to start with kind of a clean slate and then maybe possibly deal with an adoption through the county later. So we contacted a private adoption agency that basically puts birth parents and adopting parents together. They had you fill out this whole profile of you and your family and what your dreams and hopes are and all this stuff about yourself that makes you sound really good on paper. They had the birth parents or birth mother just kind of go through and find somebody that you know they gel with and go from there. We were selected by a gal that turned out to be having twins. We didn't know it at the time, but we were really excited about it, and then found out about a month before the birth that it was twins. We were there. She actually stayed with us a little while before. The county does come and still has to approve you because until the adoption is final, you're actually a foster parent to the child. And so the county has to kind of look you over and make sure that you're not, you know, killing kittens or something on the side. So the questions kind of came up about my health. At the time I was working full time, I was pretty reasonably healthy. Hadn't been really hospitalized for my lungs at all. It was an issue more for the social worker than it was for me. I wasn't worried about it at all. Because she just knew only about CF through, you know, a quick search on literature, was very concerned at first. And then as she saw kind of my wife and I at home and through interviews and stuff like that, they do a home inspection to make sure, you know, you got all the outlets covered, that kind of thing. She grew more comfortable and had no problem signing off on us adopting or, you know, doing the foster care towards adoption. We adopted the twin boys. Took about 6 months for the adoption to be final, and we decided a little while later, a few years later, to adopt again. This time we were going to go through the county and had even more rigorous, you know, approval process to go through. It's funny, you hear all sorts of horror stories about it, foster care system and all that, but they really do try. They try and weed out people that won't make, you know, for a good environment for the kid. So the issues about, you know, chronic illness and lung disease and end of life stuff came up. We were less concerned this time because we had already passed once, but it still was a concern because several years have gone by, so you know health kind of goes up and down at times with that amount of time. So I basically was able to tell her that, you know, kids who grow up in a house with a chronic illness tend to be a little more empathetic. They tend to be able to handle crises better. And in some ways, while it may be a hard thing, it's a hard thing that leads to good things. All of the kids that I had ever met in that situation fit that description. So we qualified. We adopted a daughter that was 4 and a half at the time, and now they're all three in college. The boys are finishing up. My daughter's in her first year, and we were able to become a family without just further pursuing, you know, fertility and things like that. For us, it really didn't make any difference, and we were happy to just be able to do that. So. My experience with talking with my CF team about, you know, adoption and just kind of the rigors of parenthood and all that was pretty minimal. I was, like I said, I was pretty healthy lung-wise. It just would need antibiotics, you know, once or twice a year, but never, you know, was not in the hospital and not needing a lot of support medically. And so the idea of talking to my doctors about it never even occurred to me. It wasn't something I felt like it would impact my health, although it, in some ways it did. There was a lot of, you know, being up late at night and not sleeping and working and traveling too much and blah, 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 that did impact my health a little bit. But I didn't feel like I was at a point where I needed so much support that I needed to actually talk to my doctors about it. I mean, even my general practitioner didn't really know until we announced it. Next time I saw her, type of thing that we had adopted. Going from, you know, having no kids at all to suddenly having two with twins, they actually have a term for it. It's called twin shock, where it just suddenly you're full on. You've got one in each hand, and then you've got to open a jar somehow. Because I wasn't doing a lot for my health at the time, and I wasn't having to, it didn't really impact me as far as, you know, not being able to get treatments in or just, you know, not being able to get to the doctor or whatever. So it didn't have a huge impact on my health at the time. I really enjoyed being a father. It's not for everybody, I know. I know people that are happy to have kids. I know people that are just kind of struggling and miserable having kids. And I know the opposite, people that don't have kids that are just, you know, living totally fulfilled lives, and other people that don't have kids and just, you know, wish for all they could to have kids. Having kids, it's, when my kids were younger, I felt like a much better father. As my kids got older and their schedules got more complex and their wants and needs and issues and things like, I'm not that kind of a detailed guy. And so, you know, I kind of go for the big picture with my kids now. But when they were little, it was all about the little stuff. And I was really, you know, I really enjoyed having young ones around. And I don't regret that at all. I really enjoy that part. And now that they're getting older, they're, you know, through their college years, especially my boys, through their like high school and college years, I was working, and I was, you know, my health was just starting to transition into needing more support, and man, it was just all I could do to just keep up and then keep food on the table, type of thing. So I wasn't really as close and involved with them in their, you know, teens and early 20s now. As they've gotten older, you know, they've got cars now that need repairing, and they'll come to me for help. And I think they've kind of resigned the fact that, you know, if it involves details or finance stuff or whatever, talk to mom, and you know, if it's not, then, you know, we talk to dad. I'm much closer to my daughter, and overall through the years, I think I just clicked with her a little easier. She was able to talk to me easier about things, and I think her needs were not overly detail-oriented, and so I was able to just be there and be a father, and she and I are still to this day are very close, and I think all three of the kids are they're just great kids, and so I don't really feel like I can take tons of credit for that. I mean, I think they're just great kids, but I think they also just, you know, growing up in a house with a chronic illness, I think they're more empathetic, and they're definitely more able to handle when someone's not well. You know, even if it's temporary or whatever, they're just able to just kind of go past it and deal with the people, not as sick people. So our house is very open about things. Like I said, my wife's a nurse, and I've been in medicine all my life, you know, on the receiving end. And so we've always just been really open with the kids, and just never had to feel like we were, you know, hiding things from them or whatever. Fortunately, I hadn't been, you know, really sick throughout their younger years, so you know, it's not like we just kind of had to sit them down at some point and say, you know, Dad's not doing well. It's funny, one of my kids took a biology class, and cystic fibrosis came up that they were supposed to, as a choice on one of the things that they could write a report on. My son wanted nothing to do with it. Like, no. He wouldn't tell him that I had CF. He just, you know, was like, I don't know. I don't think my kids really dealt with that scary part of CF, the longevity and the illness and the suffering and all that stuff, as much as other kids would with someone that was sicker. In the last year or so, my boys are 21, my daughter's 20, she just turned 20. And this last year has been probably the sickest I've been in their life. And so they're just kind of being a little more concerned, and you know, they're more willing to mow the lawn for me, things like that when I'm not feeling good. And I think it's starting to kind of dawn on them that that I won't be around forever. And I think they're handling it well. They seem to be, you know, adjusting to it well, and haven't really had any major heart-to-heart talks with them about it. If I talk to somebody with CF now that's a young man, just kind of, you know, hearing for the first time about fertility issues or just kind of processing that in the first place, I first of all want to warn them about the fertility clinics that you know, will just continue to take your money and you know, never have to deal with the consequences of just, you know, going broke trying to have kids. There's so many options for having kids, for adopting kids, for just enjoying other people's kids. I mean, it's not a big issue as far as availability of options around you, and there's tons of ways to deal with it. It is a big issue if you think that because you're infertile, you can have unprotected sex and things like that. That, you know, the issues for sexuality are the same whether you have CF or not. There's, you know, really STDs and unwanted pregnancy. Well, of course, unwanted pregnancy is not the real big issue. I'm going back to a conversation I had with my own kids, but you know, STDs are just a really big deal, and I always tell them, you know, don't get caught up in the fact that you can't have kids and think that, you know, that means that, you know, you can do whatever you want sexually. It's still a dangerous world out there as far as STDs, and you know, I always emphasize that because I don't know that they get that message when they first hear you're infertile. They're dealing with that and not necessarily any of the other issues around sexuality. And so I always like to just kind of, you know, make a point of that and reinforce anything that anyone else around them might have been saying about.